Blog Talk Radio.
There's some dangerous large carnivore out there.
Yeah, I saw that bird pick a young deer off the road and fly away.
And it was just about getting dark, and we started panicking, running down the bridge, not really having any clue what was throwing rocks in our vicinity, good-sized rocks. And I stopped long enough to get a 357 out of my backpack and look back, and that's when I thought I saw one.
For a week, the town of Defiance was being harassed by a werewolf. And it's actually attacked two railroad workers, killed livestock. You know, just a lot of weird stuff that was going on.
Hopsquatch Radio, Monster X Radio. We had a little technical difficulty getting on, but we're here now, so you have to excuse the noise in the background. I'm actually in a secret location. So, Shane, are you there?
I am here.
Okay. So we just finished, Shane and I were both at Guy Edwards event, monthly event here in Portland called Hopsquatch, and had some interesting information with Mark. What's his last name, Shane?
Mark Marcel.
Marcel, that actually went and located the location of the cabin from the Fred Beck story from 1924 when those miners had their cabin attacked. I think everybody's familiar with that story if you've heard any. Know anything about Bigfoot history at all. So what do you think about that?
You know, it's fascinating. You know, I'm a part of Cryptologue Radio, and we had Mark Marcel on a couple months back, and he went over a lot of his recent trips out there before he had gone back out there with Cliff and Craig, you know, Cliff Brackman and Craig Flippy. Tonight, I actually learned a lot of new tidbits to the whole trip out there, or multiple trips out there, and he brought a lot of new information to light. A lot of stuff he did not share with Cryptologic already. So it was very enlightening, fascinating. I know it's changed Mark's outlook on Bigfoot in general, but also the history on it. And you know, to find a location, you know, some say not lost, some say lost, but, you know, at least to what I consider to be, you know, historical, and to actually find the location. Like I said, I believe he found this location. I find it very fascinating. And some of the information he provided, historical news clippings and what they found out in this area, I found to be just phenomenal.
Yeah, really cool. I mean, from the way that they located the site, and it's a miracle that it wasn't buried in ash, you know, in 1980 when Mount St. Helens blew its top.
Absolutely. But, you know, they found a lot of old growth trees, and some of these trees are, you know, just so large in size They show that this area was, though it was impacted somewhat from the blast of Mount St. Helens, this area was kind of protected in a lot of ways from the blast, so that they could actually find some evidence, of the Ape Canyon, of the, the cottage or the
cabin.
Yeah, the cabin. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird. I mean, they found boards with nails in them, or logs with nails in them, and a spoon.
They found
several stumps, and Fred Beck and his buddies had actually cut down some trees up there to build this cabin. So there wasn't any. It's an area that apparently has never been is not on the record of having ever been logged. So there's a lot of big giant trees. So and having those stumps in place gave them a reference point, because they did have there was some anecdotal stories about the general location of the cabin. Of course, we didn't have GPS back in 1924, so you have to go by landmarks. It's interesting because at these Bigfoot, iconic stories for Bigfooters, back the Fred Beck story, and the Patterson-Gimley film site was actually lost. And there's a group of guys that I went out with, Steven Stroyford and Jamie, and they used stumps in their determining of the site, the film site for Patty. So things that could have been lost forever, you get somebody who is really dedicated and you have to be a little bit obsessive about it to go put the time in and go. And I hear it's no easy hike to the cabin site. So kudos to Mark for going up there and putting the time in to save that location for now and for future generations. So not that
absolutely.
He's telling everybody exactly where it is, but
yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of the other evidence they had found was they found limbs or rather large logs that had been cut, and they can't date the cuts on some of these logs.
Right.
But they do seem to be old, and like you said, there's not been any recorded logging or forestation in this area. So some of these log cuts, not too far away in the general vicinity of the cabin, are rather compelling, along with, like you said, the nails and the spoon and some of the pictures. They pretty much, I think, nailed down the site with, like I said, some of the corroborating pictures he was providing from then till now, some of his work he's done, with the ladder. He presented this little slideshow with a ladder in the picture, and he kind of found the same location where this ladder once stood on this cliff. And I found that rather compelling. It matched up really well. What are your thoughts on that, Gunnar?
He found the. He used the picture, a newspaper photo from that had somebody standing on the ladder, and then his son was in the background by a tree, and he took that ridge line and matched it up on a current photo, and it matched up real well, considering how much seismic activity there's been up in that area. There had to be a little bit of change, but it matched up really well. So, it'd be like putting a puzzle together, because you've got, a cabin that has been destroyed and isn't clearly visible, but all the little pieces of evidence that you have and clues that you have to go, they had how close it was to the actual canyon. They had a location of a spring that was so close, within so many feet. So, pretty amazing. I know he was stoked when they started finding nails and found the spoon, and being the like you said, the likelihood that it's got to be the miner's cabin, because how many cabins would have been built in that vicinity for any reason, especially since there wasn't logging going on.
Yes.
So,
yeah
no, really absolutely. Cool story.
No, very cool story. I mean, just the amount of work he's done. It's not an easy area to get to, and he, like you said, he's not himself nor some of the guys he's taken out there are not the most fittest guys. They're not in the greatest of shape, but they were very adamant about making it out to this location, and they had done their homework, extreme amounts of homework. There were some newspaper articles that he shared that he said were so hard to find. He actually dared the audience there to go back and try and find some of the, not the articles per se, but the actual newspaper that posted them, because they're that hard to find. And so he really has done his due diligence in finding this area and corroborating evidence. And I know he's not ending it now. He's got bigger plans. You know, I had talked to him, Mark Marcel, a while back about possibly going out there with him, because I really like to see the site. You know, I know Craig and Cliff have been out to the location, and you know, like Cliff said, Cliff Brackman said tonight, you know, Mark Marcel is one of his heroes in the fact that he's really he came from being, you know, kind of a skeptic, really not involved in the Bigfoot world per se whatsoever, just a story. He wanted to find this location, and he set his sights and time and money and everything else on that, and he found, you know, this location. And he's found not just the location, but some of the stuff that went on in this location disturbed him a little bit, to kind of think that, you know, maybe perhaps, you know, Bigfoot is a real thing, and they're still in this area.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't think. I mean, you always wonder what happened during the blast in 1980. Were there any squatches in the area when that happened? And are there some buried under ash up there? Or did they, you know, pack their bags and head out of the area before go visit relatives down in Oregon or something prior to the explosion? So.
Yeah, exactly. If it was my wife, she probably would have perished, because her bags would have been big. Hopefully these guys had small bags. I probably would have perished too, because I would have been carrying them. But hopefully Sasquatch, if he was in the area at the time, you know, did, because there was ash and stuff falling in this area. I mean, a lot of it was buried,
right,
a lot of this area. But, you know, I found it compelling that some of these large old growth trees were still there, untouched. And, you know, that was rather compelling to me, along with some of the newspaper articles, some of the stuff that he's found. And this is not an easy area to get to, I mean, by no means. And like I said, you know, he's found tracks in this area. You know, he's not a, you know, your so-called researcher or track expert or anything, but he found some compelling tracks in this area. And then they've also witnessed some interesting sounds or what have you in this area. Gunner, we were sitting at Hopscotch, and you tapped me on the shoulder.
Yeah.
And there was a reason for that, because he was describing something that I know that you have somewhat experienced there, you know.
Well, they were talking. I was talking about the really low bass thumping sound, and that, here a month and a half ago when Larry and I were out at our site that you're very familiar with,
yeah,
we had, and we've heard thumping before, but that was when we were being, we had gone off trail to deploy a recorder and started hearing this thumping sound, and then when we got back to the trail, it basically was behind us all the way back to camp, and we actually recorded some of it, and it's in a really strange frequency. So that was like, you always like, as you know, when you're out and you experience things, it's always cool to hear somebody else talk about something you experience. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm not completely crazy. So
yeah, it matched up so well, because what he was describing is really along the lines of what you guys had experienced. And, you know, I've been to this area, and I go out there frequently with you guys, and we experience a lot of thumping that we can't explain, that sometimes we don't even hear in person, that our recorders pick up. But what they had experienced, I think around camp, everybody in that camp had heard. So they know that nobody was out there making this noise, because everybody was present to hear this noise, or noises, and feel it. I think they kind of almost felt it at one point, kind of along the lines of what you and Larry had experienced out in, you know, on the coast.
Sorry, I'm going to have to jump. I got to open up the, let's see, I'm expecting a call in here any minute. We have a special guest that's joining us, so.
Yeah. Well, Mark Marcel, I was going to say, Mark Marcel, what a guy. You know, Guy Edwards really did a fantastic job with getting Mark Marcel there. You know, Cliff Brackman, he was playing music with his little band, and that was, I've heard Cliff play before, and Cliff is a great musician, and along with his fellow bandmates, really enjoyed that a lot. And then having Mark Marcel there, Mark Marcel was just captivating. He was very thorough, very well, he had researched this subject so well that there was not any downtime. It's, you know, listen, because you might miss something. And I really, really enjoyed his presentation. He was, you know, very humble, and very just captivating. So it was a real pleasure to watch and listen to Mark Marcel. I had a small, you know, I had a small window to talk to him, and like I said, just a genuine person that is very much interested in the subject, and his knowledge on it, you know, he's done his homework, and I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I always really appreciate. I mean, it's cool that there's people that will focus on one particular area, because they become such an expert at it. So it's like, we got guys that did that with Bluff Creek, and now Mark has done that with Ape Canyon, and it adds so much to the history of Bigfooting. So I think we got a special guest that's listening in, sitting next to me, the host of Hopswatch, the hostess with the mostest.
Yes.
And,
I was going to say there's a little bit of an echo, but we can maybe get past that.
Yeah, I'll just walk away. Hello, Monster X fans. How you guys doing?
We're doing
good. Hello, Guy Edwards. Thank you for joining us, man. Pleasure. What an event you put on tonight, man. I got to tell you, it was just a way to end the season of, you know, your Hopsquatch events. It was perfect, and it was one of my favorite events to attend.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. You know, this is one of my goals for Hopsquatch, is to not only get Bigfooters here in the Northwest together, which I think over the year, lots of Bigfoot connections have been made, which I really appreciate. But also, you know, even though Ape Canyon is deep and dear to all of us, Mark Marcel is really kind of an outsider. And this is the other part of Hopsquatch that I think is important, is bringing these people that are from the outside looking in and kind of contributing to our research, even if they're not necessarily Bigfooters himself. I think Mark is a tremendous example of that. I mean, I think I've heard the Ape Canyon story 1,000 times, but not in the way that he was able to tell it to us.
Absolutely.
I want to just say thanks, Guy, because I don't know how many Monster Xers have had the chance to attend Hopsquatch, but I found Hopsquatch a couple of years ago, and it's awesome to be able to be in a room with other Bigfooters and people that share a common interest, even though we may not all agree on the nature and stuff. But Guy has put together like an awesome event. I don't know of anything else like it anywhere where
there's not
so many people get together and. We all, you know, we can sit and talk Bigfoot, and Guy finds great speakers to put on programs. We're fortunate that, you know, Cliff Erickman lives in Portland and is a regular attendee, but he's also put on programs. Tom Powell, and tonight's was exceptional. So it was really fun for me. And hearing Cliff and his band play was pretty cool too. So kudos to Guy for all the hard work. I know people don't think about how much goes into putting an event like that on every month, but thanks a lot, Guy.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's definitely a labor of love for me. I think that one of the unique things that we have about Pacific Northwest Bigfooters is just like any other Bigfoot community, we don't all agree with each other. But I think there's something special about the researchers here in the Northwest, where we're a little bit more eager to listen to each other and kind of hear each other out. And that's another thing that I kind of want to showcase in the Hopsquatch event is whether you're a paranormal or if you're in a camp like me, where I'm a little bit more flesh and blood. I think that there's something that we can learn from each other. So I'm pretty excited about it. This is officially our second year, unofficially our third year, and hopefully next year. I don't have anybody's specific time slots yet, but we definitely are going to have a bigger year next year. There's no doubt in my mind.
You know what, I don't know how many. We had a pushing a good 100 people there today, so the room was full for Mark's presentation.
Yeah, it was packed.
We've already outgrown two other spaces. And this is this Lucky Lab in Northwest Portland is our third spot that we've actually gone to, and we may be busting at the seams there too. So we're going to give it a couple more months, and then if we need to find a bigger spot, then we definitely will. But I think this is the best bang for your buck to basically take the same thing that you would get at maybe a Hopsquatch convention that they usually have, once a year, in some obscure place, where you can actually get the same type of thing right here in Portland. For only $5 a ticket, I'm extremely proud, and I really appreciate Shane and Gunner for supporting me not just this year, but you guys have been longtime supporters, so I really appreciate it.
Well, there's a lot to support there. There's a lot to support there. I kind of refer to this evening with Mark Marcel. Fantastic event, fantastic guest. You guys give a lot of giveaways. Have a lot to offer to the crowd, and almost every guest provides something compelling. You may not always agree with them, but you appreciate the guest. Mark Marcel tonight, he really came into this he didn't come into this for Bigfoot. He came into for the history of the what happened. Is this location legit and all that? And he made a very compelling case. And since he's done his homework and due diligence into going into this field, he's kind of made his own opinions on it and found some compelling Bigfoot evidence on top of just the actual location. And that was awesome just to witness in person.
Absolutely. I think, and this is a thing that I think that is a benefit for anybody who attends, is they can learn from his approach to research. So one of the things that I was blown away with is Mark Marcel, wherever he goes to another town, he goes to their library and checks out their microfiche for stories specifically about Ape Canyon. But we could all do that about Bigfoot if you go to a library and check out the microfiche. And I just think that, there's probably a half a dozen things that Mark Marcel does that we could probably add to how we do research for Bigfoot.
Absolutely, yeah. It's pretty cool that. He also dealt with the story of some other explanations of that Ape Canyon incident, and one involving some Boy Scouts and he found, actually researched and found a news article that kind of dispelled that as a possibility, because the dates didn't match up there's a Boy Scout camp and they would do this overnight trek to that near that location, and he actually went back and found an article that had dated that Boy Scout trip, so fell outside the window. They wouldn't have been there at that time. So
I've never seen anybody in the Bigfoot community have as much documented evidence as Mark did today. I mean, he had paper over paper, all these different pieces of documented evidence that he had gotten from government archives and such, just to build upon his argument or his defense of what actually happened at Ape Canyon. And I think what you're saying, Gunner, is correct, is that, you know, he even was able to dispel some of the other stories that people thought, well, these were Boy Scouts. These were, you know, he had documentation that actually backed up why it might not have been that. So, and I hope that that we can get some of that documentation and kind of tell that whole story, either on Bigfoot Lunch Club or and then let, you know, all the fans at Monster X know where to get that, because this documented evidence is a great example of how we should also be doing research.
Guy, why do you think that is, that you think that Mark Marcel brought this to the table with the amount of documented evidence and nobody actually involved with Bigfoot has? So why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think that the best answer is focus, right? So I think, you know, it's very easy, and I'll speak for myself, to get distracted by all the Bigfoot stories or the latest encounter. And I think that one thing that was very clear is Mark was extremely focused on this one incident that happened, you know, over 90 years ago. And so with that amazing laser-like focus, he could actually dig as deep as he could on that one event. And I think that, you know, if other researchers found something that kind of spoke to them, one incident, and maybe not necessarily the most recent one, I think they would be able to back up the same stuff. And you know, the funny thing is it's true. Over 90 years of Bigfoot researchers knowing about the Ape Canyon stuff, and here's a guy who just happens to you know, work at his parents' aquarium, be obsessed about these topics. And he also happened to be a land surveyor, so that also gave him an angle. But to answer your question, Shane, is I think it was because he was able to focus. He was like a laser, just willing to go deep into detail about this one topic and this one incident. And I think there's a lot of Bigfoot stuff as far as behavior, as far as where Bigfoot might be hanging around, that we can learn because of what Mark has done just with his documentation.
Great answer. You know, he really is. He came into this whole thing unbiased, with no opinion whatsoever. I mean, he came into it with no real precedence, nothing to do
no
with
agenda.
Bigfoot per se. Yeah.
No,
and
he didn't have a Bigfoot agenda.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he went out of his way to really document this one case. You know, a lot of the problem with the Bigfoot community, I find, is that people all are spread out all over the place. You know, it's like, okay, the newest video, the newest information put out there, but they don't key in on just one subject and following through with it. They tend to spread their thoughts and opinions and research across the board instead of keying in, like Mark Marcel did, on one location, one incident, and following through with it.
Right. And I think the other consequence, and it's a beneficial consequence of this, is I think Mark is happy to share all this information, and he doesn't have to be the guy that owns it, you know. So, I mean, he's always going to get credit for doing all this research and providing all this insight to the Ape Canyon incident. But one of the things is I think because he didn't start in the Bigfoot community, he doesn't necessarily feel like, and without a Bigfoot agenda, he is so willing to share all this information about Ape Canyon. I think it's a good example of, even though he's not a Bigfooter, I think it's a good example of what Bigfooters can do. I think the only other example that's similar to it is what Stroyfert has done with the Patterson-Gimlin site, him and Rowdy and Robert Lederman. I think those guys willing to go to that site and share all their research, I think that's important. I think that's something that we have to realize, that we all have the same goal. And I think the pendulum is shifting. I think people are getting together and collaborating a lot more than they used to. You know, when I hear stories from the I'll call them the old timers or first or second generation Bigfooters, is they used to covet their research. They used to not share it with anybody. And I think there's been a shift in the culture, especially here in the Northwest, where we want to share each other's information, and nobody has to be the guy who owns it. We just want to make sure that we're sharing it with each other.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a lot to be said about that. You know, a lot of people, I in certain groups and forums, I post links to historical sightings or sightings that at least have taken place, not nowadays, but maybe in the past. But there's a lot to be learned from those encounters. There's a lot of tidbits that really add up to a bigger picture, and a lot of people give me flack for, well, that's not recent. You know, there's you're reposting stuff that really doesn't provide anything current news. And I said, you know, there's a lot to be learned. You know, you got to look at the past. You got to look at what people have done before, and then build upon that. And that's exactly the approach Mark Marcel took when he went in there. I mean, he wasn't looking at, okay, was it, you know, this site here, what's the new encounters or what evidence has been brought forth since. He looked way in the past and dug up so much history and so much corroborating evidence that it's overwhelming. And that's, you know, a lot of I find it really fascinating and fun to do that because it really builds a bigger picture.
Absolutely. In my day job, I work with a lot of information specialists and data analysis and guys who experience big data. And, you know, they're not Bigfooters, but I'm very proud of my Bigfoot interest. And I talk to them, and they always say, is like, you guys have so much data already that you could be mining that you haven't touched it yet. And I agree with them. I think there's historically, there's so much more that we should be getting interested in before it gets too hard to have access to it, you know. But all those guys who are data experts and information technology experts, they're always saying, well, you already have enough information recorded, cataloged out there. You just need to mine it better so then you can actually, you know, glean some more, you know, predictable information that's out there. If you're interested in finding Bigfoot or learning more about what Bigfoot is.
Yeah, you know, it's like mining for gold. You know, it's, you know, some people leave a claim, you know, that they got all this gold from and whatnot, and something happens and you have to leave this claim, but yet nobody goes back and goes, okay, well, these guys found gold there, but, you know, I'm going to find my own claim somewhere else and study that claim and hopefully it will pan out. When in fact they could probably go back to the old claim and dig up multiple amounts of gold. You know, it's just a fascinating subject with Bigfoot per se. That, you know, the historical stuff has so much substance there that we need to pan there first before we go and try and dig another claim. Let's start with what's known and then build upon that. Sorry,
yeah,
Matt, if I cut you off.
That's okay. I know it was a great point. You know. The crazy thing is people go chase the latest, like you say, chase the latest sighting. I mean, it's building that historical database, you know, something like the Olympic Project is doing, where they are trying to create predictability and taking the historical data first and seeing where that is and building on that. You know, it's starting over from scratch is kind of silly. If you're not paying attention to what happened in the past, then you're basically just starting in from scratch. And it's cool to go, you know, look at areas that are hot now. But Shane's absolutely right in, like, you know, having a context of the history and where things have happened in the past, what people already have experienced and what's documented is, you know, invaluable to Bigfoot research. I think a lot of that goes to there's a lot of people that want to be the quote-unquote the man, and, you know, I'm the one that found Bigfoot. And my whole thing is collaboration, not competition. So our group works with other groups to share information, and I think that we can accept the best way to accelerate the research is by sharing information and building up a database.
of what we know. So, because there's still a lot we don't.
Is there a classic that you guys wish we knew a little bit more about?
What'd you say?
Is there a classic Bigfoot story that you guys wish we knew a little bit more about? That, you know, if we could get someone on it, they could dig into it.
Jacko would be awesome.
Yeah.
The Minnesota Iceman, Jacko.
John Green.
John Green. Anything that John Green's got. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot to be learned from that, from those you know, whether, you know, a lot of people, there's a lot of historical value to those scenarios in cases.
Yeah, I think, well, Jackal would be an absolute fabulous one. I think, you know, the other one that you mentioned, the Minnesota Iceman, I think that one is the one that we could probably have the best luck with as far as finding out whether or not it got replaced. I think that, since it's almost recent, that if we sent somebody on this mission, that they could actually clear up exactly what happened from when it got presented to what happened in Argosy magazine to, you know, when was it real, when was it not, did it really stink and all that stuff. I think there's lots of different pieces out there, but the Minnesota Iceman would be the one that I would love to, I think we would have the best luck at, trying to figure out, you know, what happened.
You know, in the early days of Monster X, we had Museum of the Weird, and I forget his first name, and I have to apologize, but
we had
Museum of the Weird on from Texas, and he obtained a body of the Minnesota Iceman, and he admitted on the show for the first time that it was not the actual body, it was a replica, but he knows a huge amount of history on that, and that replica is very close to what the Minnesota Iceman actually looked like. And it's not the original, by no means, but there's a lot of history there. There's a lot of questions, and that'd be fascinating to dig into that.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the image of, you know, how he's got that right arm above his head and the left arm is, like, right on his chest.
Yes.
And, like, it's burned in my mind. And when he got that that replica, you know, that's one of the things I asked him. I go, does it stink? And then he goes, no, it's a replica, you know. And because, you know, that was one of the things that I said when the ice started to thaw, that the stink from that thing was just so obnoxious that they thought that at least the original, there was actually decaying flesh for sure.
Right. Yeah, I find that fascinating because there was, you know, there is historical references to it smelling and the look of it and some of the body descriptions and whatnot that are not with the current representation of what is shown out there now. There's a lot of history there. You know, whether or not it's true or not, who knows, but it'd be fascinating to delve into that. And, Guy, man, if you could get that together for a Hopscotch event, man, you'd have to get probably... you'd have to probably rent out the whole building.
yeah, absolutely. Well, it's one of my favorite stories for sure.
The Coliseum has some. You can book the Coliseum, the old War Memorial Coliseum there.
Right, I might have to. Well, that's one of the things. That's one of the plans. You know, originally the plan was to do these monthly things to kind of get practice to do our own annual one. And that is still in the plans, and actually my two co-conspirators, Jay Lahan and Angie, are planning on doing something next year, maybe. We're going to go through the numbers and find out how to do it. But one of the things that I think is missing from most of these Bigfoot conventions is really the opportunity to do something social afterwards. I mean, they always have a great speaker lineup, but I think what they're missing is a chance for everybody to kind of like mix and mingle and kind of have this big open space for people to kind of like find each other and drink and get loosened up and talk Bigfoot. Because when you're right there listening to somebody, you don't really have that opportunity to connect with other people. And I think that's what, you know, especially these old time Bigfooters. And I mean, people like, you know, from Cliff Berrickman's generation and Tom Powell's generation is, they usually end up having to create like a private party afterwards just to get together with all these people. And I want to be able to like have that private party be public so everybody can mingle at the event.
Well, you've done a fantastic job at that. And in fact, I was actually surprised. I did not know Bob Gimlin was going to be present at the Hopsquatch, and he was there. That was fantastic.
Yeah, that was Bob Gimlin's super nice. He doesn't like to publicize it, but I like to. You know, I think at every Hopsquatch there's been some kind of extra surprise or unexpected surprise, and so I found out last week that that Bob Gimlin was coming, and I just thought it would be a great treat for everybody and to have him there, and he came on his own. I didn't ask him to. I feel fortunate to call him a friend. And when he found out that we were doing one more Hopsquatch this year, he asked if he could attend, and I said definitely. You know, he's actually an annual member of Hopsquatch. He actually bought a membership. So, but yeah, it was great to see Bob Gimlin there. He is, and if anybody else gets a chance, you know, ask him about his non Bigfoot stuff, because his early cowboy days are stories that unless you hear them, you would not believe them. You know. Just to give you a taste, you know, he used to do these things called suicide races, and you race down a hill as fast as you can, and you try to kick everybody off their horse and be the last guy at the bottom of the hill. And they would actually have boats at the bottom of the hill in the river to take people in the hospital, not in case, but because they had to take people in the hospital every time.
Yeah. Well, you know what, one of the cool things about Bob is that he goes to these events not because he's trying to do the celebrity thing or whatnot. Man, Bob goes to these events because he's interested in the subject of Bigfoot. He's always willing to learn and whatnot, you know what I'm saying? And I find that so just awesome. He's not there to turn his back and have a beer or some food and talk to everybody. He's there to actually obtain information in a subject that he's passionate about, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's just the kind of event that Hopsquatch that you built in Portland that we have, you know, that people want to go to it because it's you always learn something. It's always cool to, you never know who you're going to run into. You know, we got authors and people that speak publicly, and then we've got, you know, historical figures that show up, and it's just if you don't live in Oregon or near Portland, it would be worth your time to plan a trip to attend Hopsquatch. And there's a lot of cool, you know, we got a lot of microbreweries here, and it is the home of Sasquatch Coffee, so I had to slip that one in there.
Right, which is why I moved to Portland, because I heard of Hopsquatch.
I know,
I heard Sasquatch Coffee. Yeah. My next step is Garibaldi. That's where I'm going to go next. The coast.
You just, it's a little creepy, guy, that you're moving so close to me.
You never complained before. You never complained when I was
with
Boston.
Stop talking if you like it.
The only
that tree across the street from your house is perfect.
I was going to say, the only smell more overpowering than a Sasquatch is Sasquatch Coffee. That smell is it's a good smell, and it's so overpowering.
I'm glad you cleared that up.
Yeah, it's a very good smell.
My
the
favorite
only
is
smell
still
more
tree-knock.
Overpowering than a squat. I think we're gonna have to use that in our marketing.
It's a new byline. Byline.
So, Guy, what do you got planned for next year, man? Because I'll tell you what, you outdid yourself this year, just with all your guests and whatnot. What do you got planned for next year? Any little tidbits you can share with the people in listening in on the show?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the one I'm working hardest on is Larry Lund, and anybody who's been squatching for more than 10 years knows his name. He actually lives he lives in Washington, not too far away, but he's what we would call maybe a second generation Bigfooter. He's been on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and the odd thing is a lot of Bigfooters don't know who he is, and this is kind of the whole spirit of what Hopsquatch is about. Is this is a guy that knows a lot about Bigfoot. He's been doing Bigfoot research. A lot of things that we might think that we have invented or started doing ourselves, he's probably already done and probably invented it himself. So he's someone that I'm working really hard on. Meldrum has Dr. Jeff Meldrum. He spoke not this year, but last year. He said he's interested. Binder Noggle is definitely interested in it. Todd Neese is doing February. I think if you don't know who Todd Neese is, he's basically the heir apparent of Peter Byrne.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but my goal is on if outside of those guys is I want to continue to bring people that are kind of interested enough about Bigfoot that they're willing to help contribute to our research, but may not be in the Bigfoot community. You know, so I don't know. Maybe a biologist, a biochemist.
A
witch doctor. Yeah,
yes.
Primatologist.
A witch doctor.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if I could get people, you know, half the people I want to bring into Hopscotch are going to be people that have insights that we could definitely learn from, but also gives us that fresh perspective. And I think that anybody who's not necessarily doing the Bigfoot thing 24/7 is going to give us something that we probably haven't thought about, you know. And that's what I really want to do is keep it fresh, keep the research in the whole community fresh. And so I'm going to continue to reach out to people that are not in the Bigfoot community as well. But I think I've got some big players with Meldrum, Binder Noggle, Larry Lund, who I'm very excited about, and then also Todd Neese. So
yes.
I'm going to keep on bringing people, and I'm sure Cliff would be happy to do another one for us mm-hmm. this year. And I can probably do a two-parter with Tom Powell and Joe Bielart, you know.
Yeah.
Joe Bielart was on fire this year. I don't know if anybody, I think you guys attended, but Joe Bielart,
yes.
He gave probably the best presentation that I've seen him do in the last 5 years here at Hopscotch, for sure.
I agree. I concur. Another, in our chat room, somebody had mentioned Ian Redmond as a guest, and, you know, I'm sure he's a hard guy to fetch, but he'd be fascinating.
Yeah.
What I would find fascinating for a guest would be somebody that that has nothing to do with Bigfoot per se, but has everything to do with infrasound, you know, that's dealt with tigers and elephants or whatnot, that has dealt with infrasound, because that seems to be a hot topic, a very legitimate topic. But somebody, an expert in their field, that really has nothing to do with Bigfoot per se, but they can talk about infrasound because it seems to be a hot topic. They can describe the effects to the human body and the animals around them. That'd be a great guest. Who that is, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But
I got one for Megan Fox. You know, she's into Bigfoot, and I mean, it'd be totally just scientific and get an outside opinion. But if you get Megan Fox, I'm sure that you'd have a full room of males.
Yeah, that's oversound. That's not infrasound. That's a whole other subject.
So. We actually have a caller, someone who's calling in. So if you guys want to hold on just a second, I'm going to ring.
Let's do it.
Let them join us.
Awesome.
Caller, are you there? 714? Hello? I'm not hearing you. Okay, I did not catch. So for some reason, they did not come through, so. Sorry about that.
They're shy. That's okay. Guy Edwards can be overpowering at times.
right. I mean,
much
you,
like the smallest
Sasquatch
coffee.
Built up?
Yes.
Yeah. You think you got enough courage built up, and then as soon as it comes time to talk, it, you know, I understand.
Yeah, absolutely, but. Well, I'm really looking forward, Guy, to your upcoming your ideas for some of your Hopscotch events and some of the guests you already have lined up. I mean, damn,
thanks,
son.
I think your infrasound idea is exactly what we're trying to attempt to do. I think that's a perfect example of something that may not necessarily talk about what we should be doing in the woods, but if we could understand what infrasound's about from an expert, that's definitely mm-hmm. going to benefit the community, and that's definitely the audience that we built up for Hopscotch, I think that's right up the alley of, you know. The other great thing I like is when I look out in the crowd and I see people taking notes in their, you know, notebooks and stuff like that, I always get pleased to see that people are actually taking notes and trying to contribute to their own personal research.
And how badass is that? That is so badass. I mean, I see it too. I do take note mentally of the people taking notes physically. I mean, I find that just so cool because, you know, you get a packed house like we had tonight, and people are learning stuff and they're taking notes and they're, whether or not they believe the guest or you know, have bought into what they're saying or read what the guest is saying, they're taking notes and they're learning something. So they're taking notes because they're learning something. And, man, what a badass job you do, man. Guy, I can't say enough about the work you do with this, you know. It's phenomenal. And it's, there's nothing – I go to all sorts of events and stuff. But Hopsquatch, you know, it's my home. It's the event that if I can make it, I'm going to be there. And I really appreciate what you do. I really, really do. I know Gunner feels the same.
I do. I know.
I want to make sure Gunner said something. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. I want to talk bad about previous smaller events because I think that, you know, there's been other events maybe locally that where you've had a guest speaker talk for a couple hours with, you know, but one of the concerns I had about these other events is they really didn't give the speakers a chance to showcase everything they had. Some of them you were competing with noises in the kitchen. Some of them were basically a guy with his microphone and a boombox. Other ones were where they had a projector but they didn't have a screen. You know, so mm-hmm. So all those, you know, details and infrastructure things, I think are really important. I just really wanted to kind of step up the game. So I appreciate all your kind words, and I'm really excited about next year, and I'm really excited about doing, you know, maybe a bigger weekend event, maybe as well, where it gives us a chance to actually, you know, mingle a little bit more too.
Ooh, exciting, exciting.
So yeah, that's we have. So our caller is trying to get back in. I'm going to give him one more shot here.
Yeah, we have a few minutes left.
Yep, we just got a few minutes left here. So 714, are you there? Hello. I hear movement. That's probably Guy. Nope. Oh, we dropped him. Okay.
Yeah.
So next week we actually. Guy, are you going to the Sasquatch Summit up in Ocean Shores?
I'm not. I'm going to retire for the rest of the year. I'll be back next year, but I'm retiring from Bigfooting for at least at least all of December.
Okay. Well, right. I know that Shane and I will both be there, and actually that will be the topic of our show next week. We'll be giving you a recap from it should be interesting, and there could be some fireworks.
Could be some fireworks, you know. I work with Derek Randall's and Loom Project, and Gunner. We're all close to that, and they're going to be. We're going to have the Loom Project is going to have a huge presence up at the Sasquatch Summit. So I'm really looking forward to Tom and David Ellis speaking up there. But you know, Gunner's going to be there. I'm going to be there. There's going to be a lot of people up there. But yeah, there could be some fireworks.
Is it still confirmed that Todd Standing is going to be there?
Yeah.
That's it, yeah. And Todd Standing's there, and Phil, you know, Phil Poling, who destructed Todd's,
right.
To say unkind, I guess, his video of what's being referred to as the Muppet Sasquatch. So that could be interesting.
Yeah, and for the record, I'm not a big fan of the evidence that Todd Standing has produced so far, but to be honest, I'm a big fan of the character Todd Standing. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to actually go to the summit to meet the man. I've heard actually lots of nice things about him personally. I'm not a big fan of the evidence he's produced, but I've always kind of wanted to meet that guy face-to-face to see what he's like, just to be able to look him in the eye. So I'm a little bit bummed that I'm not going to...
I'll put on my Guy Edwards face, and I'll look him in the eye for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Just bring your lumberjack outfit, Shane,
Shane, I'll give you my beanie, my shirt.
Oh, I appreciate it. So I can have that look. Because you have a certain look I can't replicate without that. So I appreciate it. Well, we're down to, like, no time now. So, Gunner?
Yeah, well, join us next week. Shane will be back with me. John has taken some time off. He'll be back eventually, but he asked if, you know, we keep doing the show. So next week we'll be giving a recap of what went on at the Sasquatch Summit. So for now, that'll do it. Thanks, Guy, for joining us. Shane, thanks for coming.
Yep.
And I think we got the technical bugs worked out, so we'll start on time next week. Thanks, everybody that's in the chat room and listening live. You can always go get the shows on archive if you missed something and want to listen to it again. So I'm signing out from Monster X live from Hopswatch in Portland. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, guys.